Little Steven's Underground Garage is next after a world news update on VOA Music Mix.
Mali reports first Ebola death, and Egypt declares state of emergency in Sinai after terror attacks. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. Health officials in Mali say a 2-year-old girl recently returned from a trip to neighboring Guinea has died from Ebola. The toddler's death Friday is Mali's first confirmed Ebola casualty. Meanwhile, the Obama administration is touting the recovery of Nina Pham, a nurse who had been infected with Ebola, as evidence the United States is able to deal with the disease on U.S. soil. White House correspondent Luis Ramirez has more.
With congressional elections approaching, President Obama and his Democratic Party are concerned that public fear of the disease and criticism of the government's response to it could mean lost votes. With a new Ebola czar recently named to coordinate the government's response, the administration wasted no time in drawing attention to the positive development of Nina Pham's release on Friday. Still appearing weak after her release from the hospital, the nurse was driven to the White House for pictures with the president, including one showing Mr. Obama giving her a hug. It was a chance for the U.S. leader to demonstrate his confidence that Ebola poses a low risk to Americans. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the White House.
Egypt has declared a state of emergency in parts of the Sinai Peninsula and closed down the border crossing into Gaza after two separate terror attacks Friday. A car bomb blew up at an army checkpoint near the town of Al-Arish. Gunmen later attacked troops at another checkpoint, killing at least 30 soldiers and wounding 25. Afghanistan's new president, Ashraf Ghani, making his first trip abroad since taking office. This is VOA News. Turkey's president says Syrian Kurds and Free Syrian Army fighters are joining forces to defend the Syrian border city of Kobani from Islamic State extremists. Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who has agreed to allow Syrian rebels to transit through his country, said Friday that a deal had been reached allowing 1,300 moderate Syrian rebels safe passage to the besieged city. Protesters in Hong Kong say they'll hold a referendum among themselves Sunday to decide on the future direction of their civil disobedience campaign to achieve full democracy in the semi-autonomous Chinese city. Ivan Broadhead has more from Hong Kong.
Protest leaders are vowing to include as many demonstrators as possible in Sunday's vote. Alex Chow, Secretary General of the Federation of Students, says the vote is necessary after students failed to secure any firm concessions on constitutional reform during Tuesday's talks with the government. The vote is likely to contain two motions, one on whether the occupation movement should continue, and the other on whether to accept the government's tentative offer to discuss constitutional reform in time for elections in 2022. Ivan Broadhead, Hong Kong.
In rhetoric reminiscent of the Cold War, Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday denounced the United States for what he said was trying to rule the world. Speaking in the southern Russian city of Sochi, Mr. Putin said the so-called winners of the Cold War have overturned what he called the traditional world order of checks and balances. Instead, the Kremlin leader said Washington is trying to direct the world by unilateral diktat or decree, a favorite term of Moscow's during the Cold War. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the United States is willing to hold denuclearization talks with North Korea, but not just for the sake of talks, and it's premature to talk about reducing U.S. forces in the Korean Peninsula. Kerry's announcement came after his meeting in Washington with South Korea's foreign minister Friday. Kerry said that before there could be any talks, the U.S. needs to be certain that North Korea is prepared to live up to its obligations and abide by international norms of behavior. So-called six-party talks with the North involving China, the United States, Japan, Russia, and South Korea have had a series of setbacks. Canada's prime minister says Parliament must expand the powers of the country's spy agency to track terror suspects abroad and detain people in the country suspected of plotting attacks, and that he will press for speedy approval. The push by Stephen Harper to give the Canadian Security Intelligence Service more power is due to the attacks in Ottawa near Montreal this week. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
In Indonesia, we say Variasi Terbaik Dunia, VOA Music Mix.
Everybody says the world's best variety, VOA Music Mix.
Come to the land of living dreams, where realists dream of the unreal. Beatniks at their bawdiest. The creative urge at its most primitive.
For those of you with heart conditions, or who are with young and impressionable children, we ask that you turn around in your seats.
Alive! It's alive! It's...
Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Now they will know why they are afraid of the dark. Now they will learn why they fear the night.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission.
I want counterculture. I want anti-establishment.
This is mass madness, you maniacs! You maniacs! You maniacs!
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left. With your hands on your hips.
I see all
with a bit of a mind flip.
You're into the time slip,
and nothing can ever be the same.
You're spaced out on sensation,
like you're under sedation. To the left. Put your hands on your hips.
Presence of Rocky Horror can only mean one thing. It must be the Underground Garage Halloween Ball. I am your host, Peter Rory.
All right, Rich Little, I'm not. But we are celebrating everything Halloween this week in the Underground Garage. We're going to tell you everything you ever wanted to know. and many things you could not care less about, beginning with those wild and crazy dudes in Ireland called the Celts. I know it looks like Celts, and forget about that Celtic thing with the Boston basketball team. They're called Celts, trust me. 800 years before Jesus Christ hit the manger, they were celebrating the end of summer, kind of like their New Year's party. October 31st, they called it Samhain. Who cares why? But they believed on this day, life and death came together, time and space were suspended, and it allowed the spirit world to interact with the living. Yeah, baby, disembodied spirits would come back searching for living bodies to possess. Looking to swing one more time. Humans or black cats were thought to be the host of choice. So that's where that whole black cat thing came from. And the Celts would dress up in all manner of bizarre costumes to frighten away the spirits. And that's where that whole dressing up for Halloween thing came from. So cut to 1500 years later, and the Catholic Church are looking to take over and co-opt everything pagan they possibly can, beginning with every Catholic church in Europe being built on a pagan sacred site. And Halloween will happen this way. Sometime in the 7th century, Pope Boniface creates All Saints Day, May 13th. But a couple hundred years later, things happened a little bit slower in those days. Pope Gregory sees that many of the new Christians are still celebrating the Celtic New Year's. So he figures, let's move this All Saints Day to November 1st. And it works. Everybody starts celebrating the night before. They called it All Hallows Eve because Hallow is the old English word for saint. Can you dig it? Hallows Eve, Halloween, you know, like that. And this made for a lot of cool B-movies and a lot of cool rock and roll songs and sometimes the combination of the two, like this one from Rocky Erickson.
Monsters. feeling coming in my eyes. Oh, well, my hair get long and my eyes turn blue. I got long hair growing on my fingers, too. I'm a wolf man. I'm a wolf man, baby. And if you see me on the prowl, you better watch when you hear me howl. When I jump in my car and I drive down the street, I got long clothes on my hands and feet. I just ride around how to keep the moon above. That's right. And tonight I'm coming after your sweet love. Look out, baby. I'm a wolf man. Yeah, I'm a wolf man, baby. And if you see me on the prowl, you better watch when you hear me howl. Sounds nice. I climb tall buildings and I pull down the trees. I chase little birds and I sting the bees. Oh, baby, don't just scream when I hold you tight, 'cause I'm gonna eat your love tonight. That's right, baby. I'm a wolf man. Woo, I'm a wolf man, baby. And if you see me on the prowl, you better watch when you hear me. Oh, yeah, I'm a wolf man. I'm a wolf man, baby. Yeah, you look like you could use a bite, and I sure could use a meal. Oh, yeah. Oh, oh. Oh, a chicken fricassee for me. Bring me my steak sauce. Turn around, back up, and hit me with that, baby. Oh, a rump steak. Ooh, so fine.
I'll be here playing music all through the witching hour. Even if you do have something to do, keep me turned on for a while, and I'll try my best to do the same for you.
Spending my money for me, the money I earn I never see. In all things I do, he interferes. All I know is trouble as Susie appears. Mr. High, Mr. High, Mr. High, Mr. High. My character changes, my whole mind and body rearrange. Strange transformation takes place in me. Instead of myself, everybody can see. Mr. High, Mr. High, Mr. High, Mr. High.
Woo!
This is the Professor.
And this is Bert Hagstrom of the One Hour.
And you're listening to Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Halloween edition. Is that right, Master?
Certainly, Igor. It's a show you can sink your teeth into.
I got the funniest feeling about the girl of mine. The way she looks at me sometimes can put a tingle up my spine. She wears a whole lot of makeup. I wonder what she's trying to hide. My baby at midnight. She took me back to a place. That's when I met her father.
He wiped a smile on my face.
He said, "You're messing with my daughter. That's one thing you better get." Now, baby, I'm leaving. She said, "Now, honey, won't you wait? Don't you need my loving?" I said, "Baby, I'm afraid." As I stumbled down the stairway, I almost made it to the door.
The Valley of the Jolly.
So mean. One day left his valley path. I mean to say, this cat was mad. Now looking round, he wasn't gone wrong. And then he ran into an Amazon. Well, this changed his whole complexion.
Broccoli.
He had never seen such beautiful sight. For if he looked at her, and she looked at him, as he almost passed out from fright. Looked at her, thought, what a dilly. He touched her once, she slapped him silly. This was something he had never sensed. He looked at her, and she commenced, "Now listen, pal, this ain't no fluke. I can't see going with a big green coop. You've heard about the Jolly Green Giant. Don't let his troubles cross your mind."
Sorry, Spock.
He couldn't get solid, so went back to his valley. The cat was colorblind.
We started our Halloween A-Go-Go show with Time Warp, performed by Riff Raff and friends from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Riff Raff actually being the author, Richard O'Brien, and Lou Adler producing the record and the movie, one of Lou's many very cool things he did in his life and is still doing. I Walk with a Zombie. What would Halloween be without that record? It would be Easter, that's what. Rocky Erickson and the Aliens. Now available on the Halloween A-Go-Go soundtrack from the movie yet to be made. Yeah, get it at all your finest record stores. There's still a few standing. Get in there, baby. I'm the Wolfman, says Rudy Protrudy. And the Fuzz Tones, also on Halloween A-Go-Go. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde was the Who, courtesy of bass player John Entwistle. B-side of Magic Bus. Those Wacky Woggles with Dracula's Daughter, written by bass player Patrick Buzz Hagstrom O'Connor. Buzz still there with Dan Electro, the Professor, and of course Fleshhammer, having replaced Mighty Montague, who we tragically lost way too soon. The Woggles remain one of the great live performing bands on the planet. Jolly Green Giant was the Kingsmen, which they stole from Big Boy Pete by the Olympics, which they covered from the Don and Dewey original. Lynn Easton, the cat that took over the Kingsmen, the drummer that became the singer. We've told that story many times, and it's a good one. He ended up sharing credit with Don and Dewey. Well, I guess Lynn provided the Jolly Green Giant lyrics. Right. It's Trick or Treat, baby, right here in the Underground Garage.
Hello, children. How nice of you to come visit us. We have been expecting you.
Our mission statement:
play the world's best variety.
VOA Music Mix.
Anyway, there was this Irish cat named Jack, and he dug the booze, okay? As the legend goes, he's hanging out with Satan. Yes, the man responsible for deviled eggs, the boss of bad, the king of sin, the guru of grim. And they are knocking back a few just for laughs, and Jack tricks Satan into climbing a tree and then carves a cross into it so he can't get down. Oh, that Jack was such a kidder. Long story short, he lets him down, but now the devil owes him one. So when Jack checks out, he gets to heaven, and they won't let him in, because they had space for only one boozer, and they were saving that for Dean Martin. So just as they're about to grab him and bring him into hell, he cashes in his market with the maitre d' of malice, and the devil says, listen, I can't help you with the whole heaven thing. I got a little problem there, you know what I'm saying? But I'll tell you what I can do. I can get you into purgatory. Some deal, thinks Jack. But okay. He takes a single ember from the devil to light his way through the frigid dark forest, which was the whole Irish purgatory limbo deal. So the myth gets a little unclear at this point, but either Jack or the devil puts the lit ember into a turnip to make it glow, you know, a carved out turnip thing. But I guess it worked, because when the Irish came to America in the 1840s because of the potato famine, they couldn't find turnips, so they started using pumpkins. And so Jack with the pumpkin becomes Jack O'Lantern. You dig? And that's the name of that tune.
Of London late at night,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper,
with a little black bag that's oh so tight,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
He's got a big black cloak hanging down his back,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
Well, that's a one bear cat I just hate to fight,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
Well, it won't down the street, ever get him, it says your name, the blah,
blah. Oh, Jack the Ripper, the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
When she walks down the street, he's never far behind,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
With his little black bag and his one-track mind,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
Well, he really catches up when the lights go down,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
'Cause
that the time he starts to dirty up, shop around.
To the river, down the river.
When he walks down the street, ever get him, it says, your name belongs. Never catch him, cause he's a much too clever.
He's much too clever.
But if they do, a man will get the leather, yes.
The river, check the river. The river, check the river.
With the streets of London can't never save.
The river.
Whenever Jack the Ripper ever shows his face,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
So you pretty little girl is taking my advice,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
And don't walk the streets of London late at night,
the Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
When he walks down the street, every girl he meets says your name, blah, blah.
I'm Frederick Lauren, and I've rented the house on Haunted Hill tonight so that my wife can give a party. A haunted house party. She's so amusing. There'll be food and drink and ghosts, and perhaps even a few murders. You're all invited.
Chief McClellan, how long do you think it will take you until you get the situation under control?
Well, that's pretty hard to say. We don't know how many of them there are. We know when we find them, we can kill them.
Are they slow-moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Whoa! Baby, you're driving me crazy. something very bad.
Did you wreck the car?
No.
Did you raise the dead?
Yes.
But the car's okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, then.
Started that set with Jack the Ripper by the legendary Screaming Lord Sutch and the Savages, produced by the even more legendary Joe Meek, banned by the BBC in 1961, and they released it again in 1963, and it was banned again. Man with the X-ray eyes from Jarvis Humby out of England. That can now be found on Halloween A Go-Go. The Fabulous Sonics with Psycho, which should have been on Halloween A Go-Go. They will be on Halloween A Go-Go 2, Revenge of the Candy. Coming out next year, now that we have eliminated the problem of why they weren't on Halloween a Go-Go. Yeah, real cute stuff going on there. Produced by the amazing Buck Ormsby and Ken Morrell, way ahead of their time. They also being members, of course, of the Wailers, the godfathers of garage rock in America. Larry and the Blue Notes with the original Night of the Sadist, which got turned into Night of the Phantom when the record got banned, and it's been covered by a lot of people, Chesterfield Kings and Fuzz Tones, to name two. Larry and the Blue Notes out of Fort Worth, Texas. And it was Halloween without some dead flowers. A little fun from the Rolling Stones. Sticky Fingers, their 11th album. The third album of their amazing four-album run in their second illustrious era, the Jimmy Miller era. And that concludes our set dedicated to the dead. And feel obligated to remind you, death is, after all, nature's way of saying you've become quite boring.
You've been begging for more variety.
Input noted.
VOA Music Mix.
A young playwright named Howard Koch is driving home to New Jersey. He's just accepted his first paying job, and he's already regretting it. His boss is a guy named Orson Welles, who is 13 years younger than he is, and a real nutcase. The company is called the Mercury Theater of the Air, and the job they've taken on is to adapt a science fiction novel for a radio broadcast the day before Halloween, October 30th, 1938. Orson Welles had considered Arthur Conan Doyle's The Lost World and M.P. Shields' The Purple Cloud, which Prince later adapted into a whole career, but in the end, went with H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. Now, Howard Koch was the lucky guy doing all the adapting, which meant he not only had to rewrite every 5 minutes to include everybody's ideas, but had to change all the locations from England to America. And by the way, after it was all said and done, H.G. Wells so didn't recognize his own work, he demanded an apology and a retraction from all concerned. But anyway, Howard Koch stops at a gas station, buys a local map, closes his eyes, and stabs a pencil into it. Grover's Mill, 8 miles east of Trenton, contained a grand total of one mill pond, a food store, a general store, and a gas station. It was about to become the center of the universe. You know the situation we got now, the saturation of media everywhere, all kinds of competition for our attention, media people always complaining about our fragmented society and diminishing audience and all that. Well, in 1938, they didn't have that problem. Radio was king, baby. You went out in the field and counted corn stalks, or you listened to the radio. That's it. The estimated audience for the War of the Worlds broadcast was 6 million people. And they weren't number one. The number one show at the time was, I swear to God, I'm not making this up, The Charlie McCarthy Show, a ventriloquist act on the radio. You can't make this stuff up. Now, just think about that for a minute. A ventriloquist act on the radio. Anyway, 10 minutes into the Charlie McCarthy Show, he always had a singer do a song while he polished his dummy or whatever. It is estimated that at that moment, in the most dramatic example of channel surfing ever recorded, somewhere between 2 and 3 million people changed the channel and stumbled into what sounded like a news broadcast of Mars attacking the Earth. Here's a little taste.
Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmer's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from that mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the fires, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
All right, so you get the idea, right? There were four disclaimers during the broadcast. But if you tuned in after the first one, which opened the show, the second one wasn't until 40 minutes later. By then, thousands of people were in a total panic. The roads were filled leaving town, bridges in gridlock, thousands hiding in cellars buying guns, wrapping their heads in wet towels to protect themselves from Martian poison gas. We've heard all these stories. But did you know that the whole thing was a psychological warfare experiment conducted by the Princeton Radio Project? The effects of the broadcast were studied and published in a book titled The Invasion from Mars, A Study in the Psychology of Panic. Interesting experiment at a lot of folks' expense. In her column for the New York Tribune, Dorothy Thompson wrote, "Mr. Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater of the Air have made one of the most fascinating and important demonstrations of all time. They have proven a few effective voices, accompanied by sound effects, can convince masses of people of a totally unreasonable and completely fantastic proposition as to create a nationwide panic. They have demonstrated more potently than any argument, demonstrated beyond a question of a doubt, the appalling dangers and enormous effectiveness of popular and theatrical demagoguery. Hitler has managed to scare all of Europe to its knees, but he has an army. Orson Welles did it with nothing but words."
Take off.